From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Twice a year, every year, you do it. Spring forward, fall back, and we're in and out of daylight savings time. Beginning in 2007, thanks to a provision in President Bush's recently passed energy bill, daylight savings will cover a full month more of the year, from March to November. Most Americans believe that the country shifts the clock forward toward more evening sunlight to aid the proverbial family farmer laboring in the field or milking cows. But daylight savings is really more about the buck than the bucket. More sunshine after quitting time means more time at the mall, the golf course, out there spending and playing and giving retailers and gas stations an economic boost. Critics say the cost of daylight savings is too high, confusing time zones, computer glitches, and kids waiting for the school bus in the pitch dark. On Point this hour, Here Comes the Sun, the debate over even more daylight savings. We begin this hour with Congressman Fred Upton, Republican congressman from Michigan. He co-wrote the amendment in the energy bill with Massachusetts Congressman Ed Markey that extends daylight savings time 4 weeks each year beginning 2007. Congressman Upton, thanks for being with us.
Well, my pleasure to be with you today.
Congressman, tell us why you are pushing, why you have pushed, and successfully at this point, more daylight savings time.
Well, the critical factor for us, and it was a bipartisan amendment. It passed actually by voice. That means literally without opposition in the House as well as in the conference committee with the Senate, is that this does save energy. There was a study that was done a while ago now by the government, said that for every day that we extend daylight savings time, we would save 100,000 barrels of oil for every day that we extend it. Now, that's not bad. And in, particularly in today's climate, that's exactly what we got to be doing.
Why does daylight savings time mean an energy savings?
It's a savings because instead of having the sun get up ahead of us, it'll now get up with us. In fact, that's the whole purpose of the amendment, the way that we structured it. It'll start 3 weeks earlier. It'll start the second Sunday of March rather than the first Sunday of April. And it'll go through Halloween, so our trick-or-treaters will have a little bit more light as they go out and knock on doors. But the actual time charts for the country show that we are the prime time for folks being up with the sun goes from March 9th through October 27th. So that's in essence what we did.
But Congressman, I don't know about what time you get up, but I think in November that'll mean the sun coming up around 7:30 a.m. In some places in western parts of time zones, maybe 8:30 a.m. Aren't most Americans up before that?
Well, we are, and our kids go to school in the dark already for much of us, even when we have the standard time. But where this saves us is that, well, at least when I went to school in the 60s and the 70s, again, we went to school in the dark. Schools actually started earlier back then. My elementary school did. But today we've got after-school activities that we didn't have before for school kids. There was no, let's face it, there was virtually no girls' sports.
So the idea is that we're turning the lights on less in the morning, and that's the major energy savings you
would
see
here.
That
is the major energy savings, and it allows us then to have more of that afternoon. Whether you come home from school or come home from work, you'll have a little bit more light at the end of the day, which actually will save you on the accident statistics and be able to enjoy the outdoors more.
What about the energy consumption, the driving around, going to the mall and everything else at the end of the day? In that sunlight that you're pushing there, doesn't that eat up the savings or maybe more that you might make in the morning?
We don't know the answer to that. That's a good question. We've asked the Department of Energy to actually do another study to show how much we're going to save by extending this the way that we do.
Other advantages to daylight savings time being extended?
Well, those are the big ones, but at least for those of us in the Midwest where they have these dark, sometimes dreary, gray winter days, we're going to have 3 weeks less of that. I don't know. I guess Punxsutawney Phil is in February with Grump, but winter ought to be a little bit shorter because we got an extra hour of daylight come March.
So that early sundown won't come quite so early in the season. Congressman, of all the things on your plate, of all the things that you might be paying attention to, what pushed this so high on your list? Who among your constituents is talking to you and saying, Fred, we need more daylight savings time?
Well, actually, this came all about because back in March, during our Easter break, the state of Indiana was going through this big controversy as to whether they should be with daylight savings time or not.
They've gone against the grain traditionally, right?
They have, and they narrowly, literally by a vote or two, decided that they would go with the rest of the country. Now, Arizona and Hawaii still don't have daylight savings time, so this doesn't impact them at all. But that prompted the idea. I worked with my colleague and friend, Ed Markey, who is bipartisan. And again, the audiences that I shared it with, my service clubs, yes, my farmers as well, were all very supportive. And some of the national media groups have done polls at the end of the day where you call on a telephone or on the internet, and it's overwhelmingly in support of extending daylight savings time, particularly when people know what the energy savings are.
And
it didn't take a lot of time. At the end of the day, we actually introduced a bill on it. It was simply an amendment as part of the energy bill. It passed by voice in the House, in the committee. No one struck it, and we were able to strike a deal with the Senate to get it done. And I will say that we probably got more attention on this provision than the other 1,200 pages that were in the energy bill.
And all those billions, people pay a lot of attention to their clocks and how they live their days. Congressman, we thank you for explaining what brought you into it and where you think it's going to take us. We'll be stretching our clocks just a couple years from now in a new way, and we'll remember you when we do. Thank you for joining us.
Well, thanks. Ben Franklin would be proud.
Well, early to bed, early to rise?
Yeah, well, he was the inventor of daylight savings time. He's the father of the whole issue.
Yeah, Fred Upton, Republican Congressman from Michigan, thank you very much for joining us.
You bet. Drive safe.
We will. Joining me now in the studio is Michael Downing. He teaches at Tufts University and is author of Spring Forward, The Annual Madness of Daylight Savings Time. Michael Downing, thank you for joining us.
I'm happy to join you.
Also with us this hour from Hanover, New Hampshire, in the full daylight, I do believe, is On Point News analyst Jack Beattie, senior editor at the Atlantic Monthly Magazine. Hi, Jack. Good to have you.
Thank you. Good to be here, and welcome to our guest.
Michael Downing, here we go. You just heard the congressman. Your response to this, first of all, he says, people love it, and it saves a lot of energy. What's not to love about daylight savings time?
Well, it's a charming theory, isn't it? And it's been charming Congress for more than 100 years. Here's the problem with the study the congressman is citing and which extensions have always been based on. It never has been proven to save us a single thing.
He seemed pretty sure about it.
It does, and it's unusual because if you look at the congressional record, which I unfortunately have spent the past 2 years deeply embedded with, Here's the deal. The Department of Transportation said that it could have the potential, daylight saving, to save us as much as 100,000 barrels of oil a day. It has never been proven to do that. Hundreds of years of studies have been tried. And here's the more important point at the moment. Daylight saving can't save us on electricity for a very simple reason. We in America don't use oil to produce electricity. We use nuclear and coal and steam. So the idea that we're going to save by not turning on our lights, we can't save oil that way in America.
It's not a major source of home electricity production.
It really isn't. And as early as 1919, Congress understood that daylight saving can't save us coal. So I'm not sure where the current optimism is coming from.
Now, it's been tried before extending this, as you've written, Richard Nixon. The last time we had an oil crunch, the oil embargo, in the 70s there, he mandated year-round daylight savings in 1974 and 1975, all 12 months. Did that save energy?
Well, the first thing it did was prove itself to be one of Nixon's greatest disasters.
Why?
Was fantastically unpopular with people who found themselves with school children on dark, trafficy streets. That was the major objection. Pictures flashed across the nation, and within a month of Nixon's plan going into effect, it had to be scaled back to 7 months. He couldn't do it all year. It was so unpopular. More importantly, it didn't save any energy. It didn't stem a single line at gasoline pumps, and it was not then, but as early again as 1920, that the petroleum industry recognized what you earlier said, that Americans, given more sunlight at the end of the day, they hop into their cars and they use more gasoline. Daylight saving actually increases the use of gasoline in America. It's why the petroleum industry has always supported the extension.
Now, if other listeners are like me, it all gets murky. I'm trying to think about the clock and the sun and getting up and what time. Daylight savings, when does it leave kids in the dark? What's this glacier of inky blackness you're talking about? What time of year is that really an issue?
Well, it's really when we get away from the longer days of the year, which happen in the middle of summer. So now the extension we're looking at is in March and November. Those are already foreshortened days for most of us. We don't
Northern Hemisphere, they're just not as long.
You've got that right.
So what time is the sun coming up for kids when they're going to school, and what will it be after 2007?
Well, let's say in November, we're typically looking at sunrises across America of 6:30 to 7:30. That's the average right across the country.
Right.
Move those clocks forward. America doesn't see a sunrise until 7:30 in the morning, many places until 8:30 in the morning.
And by that time, they've been in school some places for an hour or more. Jack Beatty, it's incredible to think of time as such a malleable matter. We just harness it and frame it up however we like.
Yes, here it's the government doing it, but in the 19th century, it was the railroad corporations. The sun told time from Genesis to 12:01 p.m. on November 18, 1883, when the railroads dispensed with it. In the 1850s, Americans set their watches in 80 local times. There were 38 in Wisconsin, 27 in Indiana, 23 in Illinois. When it was noon in Chicago, it was 11:27 in Omaha, 11:50 in St. Louis, 12:09 in Louisville. In Kansas City, jewelers actually competed in time, posting their nominees for noon on their shop windows.
And why did the railroads change that?
Well, because their gazetteers had to have conversion tables for 8,000 stations. You had to look through this, go through this babel of times to figure out how to plot your route. And the railroad said, enough. We want four broad bands of time, 15 degrees of longitude apart. And that's how we got standard time.
So we got standard time. And off that, daylight savings is woven in and out for much of the last century. We're going to look at that history, what its impact might be for Americans, for you. Michael Downing, please stand by. Jack Beatty, we'll be right back. We're talking about daylight savings time and more of it coming up in 2007. Are you ready for that? I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about daylight savings time and more of it coming up in 2007. The big energy bill passed by Congress just last month and signed by President Bush says we'll have 3 weeks more of daylight savings in the spring, pushing the beginning of it back to March and an extra week in November. We will have longer days at the end of the day, but it will be dark early, maybe very dark where you are. We're hearing it could be dark as late as 8:30 a.m., depending where you are in your particular time zone. We're joined for this conversation by Michael Downing with me in the studio. He's author of Spring Forward, The Annual Madness of Daylight Saving Time. Jack Beatty's with us, and we're joined right now from Chicago by Anna Weslach. She's national president of the PTA, knows a lot about school kids. Anna Weslach, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
So you're supposed to be looking out for all those school children. We're going to have more daylight savings time. What do you make of it? A good thing or not?
Well, we support the conservation of energy, but our concern is on the safety of children en route to and from school, being that they might be doing that when it's dark outside.
And presumably, you've got an awful lot of children who are on their way to school before 7:30 and certainly before 8:30 a.m.
That's correct, especially, as you mentioned, depending on what time zone people live in.
Do you have a history of hearing parents complaining that they've got children waiting for school buses in the pitch black? Is it something that parents are attuned to?
I think it depends on, you know, individual schools and what their schedules are. But with this change in daylight savings time, we probably will be hearing that more.
And what about after-school activities? We heard Congressman Fred Upton saying there, this is great for schools. They've got more time after school with sunlight to practice their soccer or whatever they're up to.
Well, again, yeah, that depends on each local school. Our primary concern is children going to and from school when it's dark outside and the safety concerns related to that.
Anna Weslach, you're national president of the PTA. That's a pretty prominent position. Were you consulted on this? Were school principals, people really focused on school children, brought into the conversation about changing the clock here?
I can't speak on behalf of the other organizations that were influential in the passage of the legislation. PTA is concerned on the welfare and safety of children, so obviously we focused in on that when the discussions were being held and we realized that children would be particularly in the morning, en route to school.
But you didn't carry the day. Why not? Who's got the more political clout here? What happened to yours?
Well, again, I think it's an individual issue. Schools and parents need to work out the schedules and the routes to and from school for children in order to make sure that they're safe. You know, the basic ending to this is we need to just make sure that with this change, the safety of children continues to be in the forefront.
Anna Westlock, National President of the PTA, thanks very much for joining us from Chicago.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Michael Downing, she doesn't want those kids standing in the dark, but it doesn't sound like she's ready to, you know, bring out a torch parade to protect the clock here.
There's a tremendous reluctance, I think, to be opposed to daylight saving because it seems like such a benign social policy. I want to say a couple of things about those school children. Not only is it not good policy to have kids in the dark, but in terms of energy, remember, this allegedly comes to us as an energy saver.
Yeah.
During Richard Nixon's experiment, school districts and administrators across the country told the government that they were spending more money heating their buildings in the morning because they didn't have that hour of sunlight before school children were in the buildings. It was a cost loser for them in 1974. It's going to cost us more energy again.
Okay. If you're saying the congressman has it wrong, it's not going to save energy, it's bad for school kids, yet he put energy front and center in his justification for this, do you buy it? Do you think that's why this has really been done? And if not, what's the alternate motivation?
Well, the congressional record tells us that's not why it was done. Here's what the congressional record tells us. In 1986, we had another extension of daylight saving. That's when we moved from 6 months to 7 months in this country.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the ticket. The golf industry alone told us by its own estimates it stood to gain $200 to $400 million a year by a month-long extension of daylight saving
time. More time on the greens.
More time on the greens, more sales of golf clubs. The barbecue industry, $150 million.
Because we'll still head out in our backyard in November and fire up the grill?
That was the idea when we moved it later in October and earlier into April, and it's the idea again. The sports and recreation industry have always been tremendous fans of daylight saving, starting with baseball and going right through to the modern day. They know that Americans will go outside and participate in leisure activities if they're given more evening time.
So you think this is folks looking to make a buck, pushing the clock in their direction, more favorable to their bottom line?
It's been a tremendously effective retail lobby for more than 30 years. And I'll tell you, this odd week we're getting at the end of this that includes Halloween, which seems, again, like such a benign plan.
Seems good. The kids won't be out in the dark so much on Halloween.
Doesn't it? Indeed. But here's the deal. In 1986, the House tried to give this to candy manufacturers. Candy manufacturers' biggest sales come on Halloween.
More daylight on Halloween evening, more kids out gathering candy.
That's the theory from the lobby of candy makers.
Wow. A lot at work here. Let's hear from that sporting industry that you just spoke of. Tom Cove joins us from Washington, D.C. He's president and CEO of the Sporting Goods Manufacturers Association. It's a national trade organization of sports, apparel, and equipment makers. Tom Cove, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
So, do you welcome more daylight savings time? Is it good for the sports manufacturers' bottom lines?
It frankly is good for our bottom lines, but more importantly, it's good for the country. We like to sort of put it, what's good for us is really an imperative for the country. Our position is, quite clearly, it's what Michael Downing just said.
Mm.
If you give people more time, when they can be outside, they will be outside. Being outside is the number one determinant to being physically active. Physical activity is a public policy imperative for us. Our health care costs, the heart disease, diabetes, all of what we know we're dealing with, we're bombarded by that information every day. We have to engineer a little bit here to encourage people to exercise, to get outside exactly when they can and they want to.
So you're saying, never mind energy savings, let's spend some human energy with our cleats on in the lighter evening.
Well, I'm not an energy expert, so I know that the congressman whom we support very strongly took the position that the study said this and Michael Downing said that. I can't speak to the energy question. Clearly, this was an energy provision. Clearly, it was in the energy bill. It's been based a number of the factors, discussion points are on energy. I'm here to tell you that there is a public policy imperative to use daylight savings time to encourage Americans to get out when they want to. In the 3 weeks of March, it's exactly the time people are coming out of the winter doldrums.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They want to play sports. They want their kids to get out. It's a great idea to get them out when they want to, when they can.
Fight obesity, spring forward. What does it do for the sporting goods manufacturer's bottom line, Tom?
Well, we don't have any good numbers, to be honest with you, but we know that when in the springtime is a big season for us. People start to think about getting out, not unlike, it's intuitive. So, yeah, it will help, but it's not going to make that big a difference to us. What we're trying to do is change the way people appreciate the need for physical activity. It's not going to change the whole obesity problem, but prevention and promoting healthy lifestyles will, and it's these kind of public policy challenges which people don't see at the first step, but are the ones that we're going to need to make to improve our nation's ability. And I would argue that the nation's health care challenge is just as serious as the energy challenge.
You've got everything sewn in here. But, Tom, what about those poor American school kids, chubby or otherwise, standing out waiting for the bus in the pitch black in the morning?
Obviously, that's a great, great concern. But, again, not my area of expertise, but I can just look at the study that Michael Downing identified with by the Department of Transportation after the Nixon experiment, which was 10 months, and everybody agrees 10 months is too much. But what they found in that same study was that earlier daylight saving time allowed more people to travel home from work and school in daylight, which is safer than darkness. And while there was an increase in the morning hazard from going to work, school and work, it more than compensated by the evening decrease in traffic injuries. Mm-hmm. Again, that's not my expertise, but that's what the study says.
Tom Cove, President and CEO of the Sporting Goods Manufacturers Association. It sounds like there's no two ways about it the way you see it, and we hear it loud and clear. We thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Michael Downing, you're starting to come off like the spoil sport here. Everyone's celebrating this. People want to get out. It's March. They want more sunlight. They want to get out and play ball. All you care about is those kids in the morning. Is that really the number one objection to daylight savings time in your view? And is it really worth not having the time at the end of the day to go out and play some more football to protect the kids on the way to school?
Absolutely not. I'm a big fan of long, late summer evenings, and I'm actually a big fan of baseball. So I'm all for daylight saving in the long hours of the summer. I am absolutely not a fan of extending daylight saving under the rubric of energy, and I think it's a cynical and dangerous way to continue to make energy policy in this country. And given the situation we're looking at now in the Gulf, we really understand that this energy bill has no provision to save the use of gasoline and has one provision, daylight saving, to encourage the use of gasoline.
So you think it'll be a net a hike in energy expenditure in the United States?
Absolutely, and it provides cover for the Congress not to promote real conservation, which causes people to actually make sacrifices. This is a feel-good policy that we use instead of sensible energy policy.
Jack Beatty, a hike, says Michael Downing, because Americans in that daylight in March and November are going to spend that much more time motoring off wherever they motor off to enjoy the sunlight, go to the mall, you name it.
Yeah, but they may be dozing off while they do it. You know, what a paradigm this is of government today. You know, we've had an energy bill, as we have said repeatedly on this program, we've had experts say, really does nothing to increase the supply of energy or conservation. We have a transportation bill that just passed that, as we had experts testify, really doesn't do much to help the bottlenecks in the country. But what do we have here? We have the effectiveness of lobbies, but not big lobbies like construction or, oil. Here we get candy and golf. It's come to that in our government. Candy and golf over the public interest and these phony rationales. Well, we're going to save energy. You're not. Well, we're concerned about obesity. You're not. My God. I mean, special interest legislation has never seemed to me more blatant than in this instance.
I'm going to play devil's advocate here. I don't know where energy savings or loss come down here. I hear what you're saying, Michael Downing, and of course the congressman and others put the other thing. I have no doubt, as Jack points out, that the lobbyists are in there just with both feet. That's the way things work today. But my sense is that an awful lot of Americans like daylight savings time. They do like that time in the evening to be out and about.
I think you're right, and I think that, you know, this is a transformation in our society. For the first 50 years that we attempted to have daylight saving in this country, it was fantastically unpopular. People hated it.
Why?
Well, there are a couple of reasons for that. First of all, that we still had a basically rural and agricultural society, and farmers suffered tremendously under daylight saving.
So I've got to ask you, when you say the first 50 years, we're starting when there?
We're starting really in 1917 in this country. 1907... A British architect named William Willett proposes the modern idea of daylight saving. He gets this idea riding through London at sunrise. push the clock forward so we can give people that hour of sunlight at the end of the day.
Because he's riding through London at sunrise, you see no one's out enjoying the sun, or not many, so why not have it later in the day? Even in 1907 he was thinking about
it. He was thinking of that, and it took the British 10 years of debate, and right before they adopted it, to their shame, the Germans adopted it.
To their shame?
Well, because Germany adopted it right as World War I broke out.
The British never want to be beaten by the Germans, is that what you mean?
That's right, and the Germans baited them and said, in fact, in one of the Frankfurt newspapers, the British could not rouse themselves to a decision.
Someday you'll be advanced like us Germans.
That's the ticket.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, Germany adopts it, Britain adopts it, then the Allies of Britain adopted during World War I under the rubric of saving energy.
Including the U.S.
Including the U.S., though I have to add, for 5 years, the Chamber of Commerce had been lobbying the White House to get daylight saving on behalf of department stores, who knew that if they had factory workers coming home in sunlight rather than darkness, they'd stop in the stores and buy more goods.
So once again, wartime opens the way for all kinds of agendas. You say Americans didn't like it when it was first introduced. Why not?
Well, for a couple of reasons. Farmers didn't like it because they now had 1 hour less of morning sunlight to get their dairy and their crops to urban markets.
But we said at the top of the hour that the perception is farmers do like daylight savings time.
Like everything else with this story, it's fantastically inverted what we believe. There's a reason for the myth of the farmers that we all grew up with, and that is that Lincoln Filene, a tremendously potent Boston department store owner,
later of Filene's Department Stores,
he's the man. Mm-hmm. He wrote a 1917 study, which became the basis for the National Daylight Saving Campaign, mm-hmm. outlining 10 reasons why daylight saving was good with farmers. Here's the problem with that study. The experience of farmers was wrong on every account, according to Filene. Filene, for instance, told farmers that city dwellers would love dew on their crops. That would make them more beautiful, and city dwellers would pick up their apples more quickly.
Why would daylight savings time put more dew on the sweet corn?
Well, here is the idea, that there was one less hour of sunlight in the morning, so mm-hmm. that dew wouldn't be drying off.
I see.
Farmers would be harvesting in the dark.
Oh.
Well, farmers told Filene, first of all, you can't harvest in the dark. Mm-hmm. Secondly, you can't harvest any cereal crops until the dew has dried.
Mm-hmm.
So Filene invented this idea that we would have better and more beautiful crops as a result of daylight saving. Farmers said they were wrong. They were so potent a lobby, the farmers in 1919, that before the Congress bothers to end World War I officially, they get rid of daylight saving in the country. National daylight saving is gone, and we don't have a peacetime law for national daylight saving until 1966.
The farmers got it rolled back because they wanted that light in the early morning to go out and do what they needed to do. Now, I believe it's you, though, who points out that today we have more people living on golf courses than on farms.
We do indeed.
So maybe the farmers' minds have changed, but maybe the population's changed in such a way that shouldn't be the anchor on this.
I think that's right, and I think farming has changed. They use electric illumination to force their dairy to produce now, so it's no longer so much a sun-dependent idea.
But it went away for 50 years before it came back in 1966?
That's right, the Uniform Time Act. We had it during World War II, but never another peacetime law.
Now, a lot of communities, though, had experimented with this. You write that in 1965, 71 American cities practiced daylight savings time, 59 did not. What a crazy quilt that is.
It was a fantastic crazy quilt. In fact, we were looking at a situation that one airline is reporting 4,000 calls a day from customers trying to figure out what time it will be in the city of their destination.
Because every city in the country had different times for half the year at least.
Half the year at least, and different cities also had different dates of adoption. Some cities only did 3 months of daylight saving. Sometimes they did 6 months of daylight saving.
Who pushed the change in 1966?
Well, that was really the greatest moment when Congress steps in, really in response to the airlines and the transportation industries who are suffering enormously trying to write schedules every month or two.
They just wanted uniformity, whatever it was.
That's the ticket. You know, the only real virtue of clock time is predictability and synchronicity. That's what our clocks give us. That's what, as Jack Beatty said earlier, standard time gave us, predictable times across the country. That's what the Uniform Time Act did. It was a compromise of 6 months of daylight saving, which seemed to satisfy the social policy idea of getting people outside, giving them a little more leisure time, and yet preserve the notion of standard time. Unfortunately, Congress has since been compromising this wise compromise right out of existence, and we're moving clearly toward a point where we will have year-round daylight saving in this country.
Year-round, and so, Jack, it's as though we can do anything we darn well please with that clock.
Yes, you can. And in the 19th century, when the railroad corporations redid time, that really got people's goat. Just that thought. I mean, the Indianapolis Sentinel said 55 million people must eat, sleep, and work as well as travel by railroad time. The sun will be requested to rise and set by railroad time. The planets must, in the future, make their circuits by such timetables as railroad magnates arrange. We'll change it to congressmen now.
It's unnatural, they said, but we're living with it. We're talking about daylight savings time. Much more to come. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
It's something unpredictable, but in the end it's right. I hope you had the time of your life.
Support for On Point comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, Bicon Dental Implants, offering short implants that can eliminate the need for bone grafting. Information is available at Bicon.com, BICON.com, and Private Wealth Management at Babson Capital. For more than 60 years, helping clients build and preserve wealth through financial planning, investment management, and trust services. In Cambridge and on the web at BabsonCapital.com.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We are talking this hour about daylight savings time and more of it coming up in 2007 when three more weeks of daylight savings will be added out of the latest energy bill in March. Another week will come into early November. That means more time, more sunlight at the end of the day, a lot of darkness early in the day, and a big debate over whether that saves any energy or ends up costing the U.S. more energy. We're joined in this hour by Michael Downing. His terrific new book is Spring Forward, The Annual Madness of Daylight Savings Time. He's not a fan, as you've heard, but we have heard some fans in this hour. Jack Beatty's with us as well. And right now, we're joined by one of those famous farmers who feel one way or another about it from Haverhill, Massachusetts. Tyler Kimball joins us. He owns Kimball Farm in Haverhill. He's got crops and livestock there, 400 acres. Tyler Kimball, thanks for being with us.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity.
It's great to have you. Farmers, a big reference point in this debate over daylight savings time. How do you feel about it one way or the other, our dear American farmer?
I think it's a great advantage to have the daylight savings time. It helps us with the crops and basically with the society that we have today that has the entertainment in the evening and at night that basically stays up later. My help doesn't want to come in early like the old days, mm-hmm. when farmers would come in 5 o'clock in the morning would be a start time, and they didn't have TVs and all the movies and everything else and the sports on at night.
Right.
The employees like to watch that stuff, so they don't want to get up that early in the morning. They want to start a little bit later, and consequently, when the sun stays out later in the day, it allows us to get all our crops in.
So you've got lifestyle changes you're looking at. There's also strictly the agricultural issues. Help us think about those for just a second, Tyler. What about the livestock? Do they care if you're out there an hour earlier or later doing whatever you do? I mean, I guess milking would be the number one thing.
Yeah, the milking would be. You have to milk the cows basically every 12 hours, unless some people do a three-time-a-day milking.
Right.
But every 12 hours, so if you milk the first one at 5 o'clock, you milk the second ones at 5 o'clock in the evening, and if it's light during both of those, it's a lot cheaper. You don't have to have the lights on in the barn and so on and so forth. We don't have dairy right now, but that is the scenario with the dairy farmers.
But for dairy farmers, they are going to have dark in the morning when they're milking. So does that make their life harder, or it doesn't matter?
Well, it's going to become light as they're going through the milking process and then starting the feeding.
And it's interesting just about the whole cycle of the farmer's day. You're saying farmers, like everybody else at this point, have become more evening-oriented. You don't have crack-of-dawn people out there.
Well, I think as a society, I mean, employees are different than people that actually own it. I mean, I start
right.
at 5 o'clock in the morning, and I love starting early in the morning. But the employees are hard to get here early because of the society things that go on in the evening. That's when the entertainment is.
Michael Downing, here we have the voice of the American farmer, and he says, I'm fine with daylight savings. In fact, my employees want it. They don't want to be out here at dawn anyway.
Well, you know, I think he's in good company in this country. Everyone eventually changes their mind one way or another about daylight saving
yeah.
time. The farmers, the problem he's talking about now with day laborers, that's long been a problem with farmers about trying to figure out their hours, and daylight saving has always messed up on one end or the other. Most Americans actually like it for the same reason, that it gives them these evenings, right? But it's interesting to hear him bring up television, because one of the big opponents of daylight saving is television.
Because they don't get people sitting down on the sofa watching TV early enough for their taste.
Well, and also, every spring when we spring forward, the Nielsen ratings drop for every TV show across America. It's why the summer period has always been the rerun period in television. People actually watch less TV if you give them more light. So as a social policy, again, possibly a good idea.
This seems to speak to our earlier guest, Tom Cove, the sports industry representative, saying they'll be up and active. That seems like a good thing, Michael.
That does seem like a good thing. It doesn't save us a dime in energy, but it seems like a good thing. So here's the deal. We encourage people to go outside and exercise. Then we give them another week and say, eat more candy, kids. Mm-hmm. And then we call it an energy policy. And it's a confusing way to call social policy rational.
Tyler Kimball, I'm still thinking about those cows. I know you don't have dairy now, but just it's been a long time since I was on livestock hours. Grew up on a farm, but not a dairy farm. When the daylight savings time comes, if it's in March or November ultimately here, and the clock changes by an hour, do the cows' milking times just change, or do the farmers come at a different clock time to milk them?
Well, no, the farmers come at a different clock time to milk them and then work them back. I mean, you can't change a cow, go from a 12-hour to a 13-hour milking. They do it like 12 hours and 45 minutes and then come back to 12 hours and 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And work it that way until they get it back.
So we do it with one painful or pleasant change of the alarm clock. The Old Bess has to be worked into it.
Right, like 15 minutes at a time over like 4 or 5 days to make it work better.
Tyler Kimball, you're the voice of the very modern farmer, and we're grateful to you for joining us. Thanks for being with us.
Have a good day.
Tyler Kimball, owner of Kimball Farm in Haverhill, Massachusetts. Jack, there's the son of the soil saying, fine with me, I'm a modern man.
Yes, now that sort of flies in the face of the people who didn't want it, and here's a farmer who does want it. It's ours to do with what we want, time. The sanction of it being God's time is long since gone. Again, just to return, I've never realized that it's something that's put out to bid in a way. You know,
right.
Now let's ask ourselves the question: if there weren't, if we had public financing or congressional campaigns, for example, would we have this provision? I don't know.
Michael, you're saying that you expect, under that kind of pressure, we may eventually have daylight savings time year-round. If that should come, what would the extremes of that look like?
Well, it's going to get more extreme as we go. Actually, the proposals we've seen, and they have been put up before Congress by several states, are to have daylight saving time all year round and then spring forward again. They're calling it double daylight saving time.
So how late would the sun come up where in that scenario?
Well, if we actually did that across the country, we would see sunrise times as late as 10:30 in the morning. So that's pretty drastic. But really what it's calling for is states like California and along the West Coast.
Mm-hmm.
They want to be able to go it alone. They want to break out of the national pattern, go on to year-round daylight saving, and double it up every year in
Why
April.
Why California in particular?
Well, here's the idea. Daylight saving temporarily shifts peak load demand. That is, when people require their electricity.
Mm-hmm.
So California has long wanted to use daylight saving as its own policy to stop the rolling blackouts it experiences during the summer months. And they figure if they can spring forward by 2 hours,
yes,
they'll shift enough of their electric customers off the power grid at the peak moments.
Now explain why they would get shifted off the grid. I'm not following.
Well, it's a complicated idea. This really arises from...
It's darker later in the morning. How does that shift electricity use?
Well, the idea is that really you start to shift the time of industrial use versus customers' use at home. So customers are starting up their demand not at the same time as they traditionally have.
Because they think by making sunrise later, consumer electricity use would kick in heavier later?
That's exactly it.
Hmm.
It has
people are going to stay in, they're going to sleep in every day.
Well, again, it's a very charming theory.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the problem. The one time there was any serious study done of this, mm-hmm. it turned out that people's demand for electricity shifted for about a week. And then they just...
And then back they went.
Exactly. They just returned to their old habits. So the real danger of these proposals is, of course, is that it's trying to go back against the idea of uniform time in this country and pushes where states will have control over their clocks, not the federal government. And then we'll have this fragmented society, which, by the way, is the other real problem we're looking at with the current extension by the Congress.
Why?
It's a unitary act by the American government.
I thought that's what you just said you wanted, not a hodgepodge of states acting.
Well, we want it all across the country, but we also want to be in concert with the rest of the world. 70 other countries save daylight. This new extension puts us 3 weeks off with all of Europe. Here's what that means.
It will, you say.
It will if we in 2007.
3 weeks, but it's a four-week change, so we're already not in sync with Europe on
the election. Already a week off. We in Canada have always refused to quite adopt the European schedule.
What, Europeans kick it in earlier or end it earlier?
Kick it in a little earlier, though there's still, of course, no national authority, no international authority who governs this idea.
Well, that would be world government and black helicopters.
That's right. It would be another terrible idea for all of us.
But you're saying it's going to be even further off, so what?
So what? It means $150 million to the American airlines.
Why?
Well, because they have already preset landing and takeoff times at airports. In order to renegotiate those times, they have to buy them essentially from European carriers.
Because they'll be taking off at different times from the U.S. when the clock moves by some absolute standard.
That's exactly right. So that's a big drag for the American airlines who fly to Europe, which is, of course, most of our principal airline carriers. But then there's transportation with our geographic partners. Canada and Mexico are now going to be off our clocks for 4 weeks a year. Same problem with buses, with trains, with trucks. So, we know this problem. It's an old one.
Jack, it worked when the railroads were in one country. Now that we've got jets all around the world, the power of the transportation lobby is not enough to get this uniform.
No, and it's as if you're sort of, one nation. It's kind of autarky, isn't it? We're going to do what we want with our time, and you can do what you want with your time, and never the twain shall meet, or at least not on the same clock.
It's amazing to think back before that the pressure of the railroads led us to that uniform standard time. I mean, really, people could call it any time they wanted. I mean, it almost didn't matter if you were traveling by horse and buggy from one town to the other, whether you were synchronized or not. It wasn't really so important, was it, Michael Downey?
No, actually, people really did rely on the sun as a measure, and they looked up and marked a noon every day, and depending where you are, that noon traveled with you, right? You looked up the apex of the sun.
But I walk, time moves with me.
That's a beautiful way of putting it, and here's the problem. Every culture, though, has understood that days are not of equal length throughout the year, and that's always bugged human beings. Here's a simple example. The Romans couldn't tolerate the idea that the 12-hour day and 12-hour night couldn't be preserved throughout the year.
They liked order.
They liked order. So here's what they did. As the year went forward, they lengthened their hour. The hour in June in Rome was 75 minutes long.
So it's still half and half.
That's exactly
because
right.
One hour just had more to it.
So cultures have always done something to try to give order to time.
So we've always played with time, but what about our relationship with the sun and with the actual changing of the season? Does it matter at any sort of basic level of human nature? I mean, Jack said earlier, well, we long ago cut loose from Genesis, let there be light. Does a direct relationship necessarily with the way the sun was moving? But I don't know, in terms of our biological clocks or spiritually, you name it. Is there some level at which you see it mattering whether or not we tinker with the clock, the relationship to the sun?
Well, I don't buy into the idea of circadian rhythms in human beings, and I don't think it's a big sleep disturber. But I think the moment Jack Beatty pointed us to in 1883 is a tremendously significant moment for us as human beings psychologically and spiritually. That's the moment when we shift officially from looking at the sun and we start to look at our clocks. And that shift, very, very pertinently for us, does not come from any government. The government does not mandate standard time in 1883 and time zones. The railroads impose it without any federal intervention or local intervention. That's the moment when we go commercial in this country and around the world.
Jack Beatty, circadian rhythms. I mean, I do remember as a boy, my grandfather, a lifelong farmer, completely attuned to the sun. For him, the clock really didn't matter around his farm work. And it was sun up that got him up. And that usually meant me up, too, to do the chores. I recall something very gratifying about that, about just timing it to the sun, just clipping above the horizon.
Yeah, it tied people into the immemorial sort of pulse of the universe. I mean, this was the way life had been for millennia. And what happened in the 19th century was it wasn't sufficient. It wasn't going to accommodate our commerce, and it had to change. And as a sort of symbolic statement of, putting, as it were, private interest above nature and above human beings' relationship from time immemorial with nature, that's quite a symbolic moment.
This comes even before daylight savings time, Michael Downing. Was there kickback against that, against the railroad clock being imposed on the nation, or were Americans embracing this as the march of progress?
No, I think there was a tremendous amount of confusion about it and sadness, just as, this idea of losing contact with the sun. And there was that was the beginning of a kind of fundamentalist idea that we were being taken off God's time. that we were being torn away from our religious roots. An interesting thing happens, though, because the government's not involved. Until 1919, we don't have a standard time legislation in this country to give us time zones officially.
Mm-hmm.
And in a perfect moment of complication and confusion by the Congress, in the exact same legislation they give us standard time, they invent daylight saving time. So they put us on standard time and take us off standard time.
Hello, goodbye.
And that's the moment when all the bad will against standard time gets instead transferred to daylight saving. And the opposition to the idea of taking us off God's time, that becomes loaded onto daylight saving. And it's a real fundamentalist Christian opposition. It's not helped by the fact that the first Sunday of daylight saving time in America was Christian Easter Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And loads of people were late for church by an hour who forgot to turn their clocks ahead.
Don't mess with Easter. Jack, how about that transition? I mean, now we live, you know, we're the fluorescent age and we're under artificial light all the time. But there was a time when tinkering with our relation to the sun must have really spun people's heads.
Well, it did. I mean, one old party said, "Damn Vanderbilt's time. We want God's time." And, you know, there were Pittsburgh Bandit for 7 years, Augusta for nearly a decade, city after city said no in Chicago. There were people were arrested for, city councils were arrested by the mayor because they tried to change time. And it was this sort of fundamental objection. You're changing something very, very basic that influences us in ways we can't even begin to describe. It's like a kind of ecology with time. And suddenly all that was changed. And boy, did it take a long, hard time for that to go down.
Well, it's changing again. And we're going to have more daylight savings. It makes me wonder if we're going to be closer to something like Alaska here, that extreme of time. No midnight sun, but more evening sun. Well into the fall. And at the extremes, you point out, we just got a minute and a half here at Michael Downing. But, of course, if you're at the western edge of a time zone, that's where you're really affected. If you're in Boise or if you're in Grand Rapids, Michigan, you get the extreme of it.
You get the deep extreme of it. And part of the problem with that, these late sunrises, is, again, time zones aren't fixed and they've been moved for Congress. The reason Grand Rapids is in trouble is because Detroit got itself changed from the central to the eastern time zone. Nothing is fixed with our clocks. It turns out that with enough pressure on the Congress, you can just give yourself a new time to wake up every morning.
Well, isn't that grand? Jack, ready to set that clock in 2007 to a new rhythm? I don't know, Jack, maybe we'll be playing a spot of tennis late in the evening.
Maybe, but it gives us a chance as journalists to use one of Nabokov's favorite words, crepuscular.
Ooh, is that like, what is that like?
Of the twilight. You know, that we can, boy, oh boy, that we're going to hear that adjective used, and it's just delightful to think of that.
Crepuscularity all night long.
That's right.
Oh, I don't know. I'm not sure I can say that on public radio. Jack, it's wonderful, as always, to have you. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
And Michael Downing, terrific to have you. The book is Spring Forward, The Annual Madness of Daylight Saving Time. You've got a great voice and great insight on this. We're so grateful to you for joining us. Thanks for being here.
This has been a pleasure.
On Point is produced by Meghna Chakrabarty, Julie Jopp, Eileen Amata, Stefano Katsonis, Matt Lieber, James Ross, Christina Russo, and Karen Schiffman, with help from Matt Odette, John Berger, and Angel Cozzelli. Our senior producer is Joe O'Connor. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR, National Public Radio.